And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and on season two, I'm joined by legendary rock star Patty Quatro, where we take a deep dive into her Detroit roots, the indelible impact of her iconic musical family, her two pioneering all-female bands, The Pleasure Seekers and Cradle, hanging with her homeboys in Detroit Rock City, and so much more. So let's get started.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. Trees, the wishing well. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun. I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you.
So I want to pick up, Patty, on this idea that it's now mid-1960s, 66, your brother's this huge entrepreneur now, you're in the band The Pleasure Seekers, you're already recorded, and you're going out and touring, you're playing gigs, and your brother, who's now putting together these festivals, not just in Detroit, but now outside of Detroit, and soon, at some point, it's going to be all over the country. But you've mentioned before, and I want to talk a little bit about this, your brother's diehard, steadfast support of you and your sisters and the members of the Pleasure Seekers and then Cradle. And yet, we have to be honest here and say your brother's incredibly talented and was also starting a business. So that tells me he clearly believed in real time about your talents. This was not just a, what's the word, nepotistic move on his part. So can you talk a little bit about how Mickey, your brother, felt about the Pleasure Seekers and putting you on stage?
I don't think it was ever a question whether he would book us. He had been watching us practice and do the thing, and he was so involved in his booking agency and building it. And, you know, he had some movers and shakers that helped invest when he had ideas and stuff, and that was great. One of them was Dave Leon with The Hideout. And so that all came in, and they were all pals in their 20s and stuff and building this whole scene in Detroit. And so Mickey was drawn to the festivals, obviously, and there was no question of the diversity. It's interesting because he had come from this da-di-da music and everything. And we were practicing. We were on a TV show, Club 1270, as dancers. And, you know, Diana Ross would bring in Michael Jackson and different people, Stevie Wonder. And so he knew that we were going on with our lives and doing that, but we had the band going. And he knew we were, he knew we had the talent. He could see that. And because a lot of times these DJs, like we played on that TV show, and they wanted to book us. They wanted us on every Cobo Hall Autorama show or a Carnaby Street Festival or a state fair. They were booking us. He knew that we were starting to gain momentum and get a name. Of course, he wanted to put us on the bills. And he did. And his bills, I mean, what a diversity of music. Oh, my God. Everything from Arthur Brown to Muddy Waters to Scarborough Fair. Huge diversity. And that's Detroit. That's Detroit. He gave them festivals that every person could come and enjoy some of the bands, even a different genre. And I think he picked that up from seeing all the different neighborhoods and how they had different music, and it all was great. And we all shared licks with each other and shared ideas. He saw that happening. He was booking all those bands, and he gave them a platform on his shows. So that whole thing widened it up. They got to be seen by record companies and play with major acts that he would bring in. And we were there in the mix. We were on the shows too. It was an amazing time. I'm blessed to have lived that era. It really was a renaissance in Detroit.
Well, I think it's so interesting what you're saying. Well, for so many reasons, but also this, the word diversity is so applicable on multiple levels. It's not only racial diversity, but there's age diversity, but there's also musical diversity. And I think your brother is so instrumental, for a bad pun, but pivotal, if you will, to all of this, because he played, as you call it, the da-di-da music with your dad when he was a kid. Yep. And then he goes to Lawrence Welk and he's doing da-di-da into a little bit of doo-wop, but for Lawrence Welk, it was really yes. not a doo-wop, maybe a little don't-wop, kidding.
Yeah.
Then he comes home to Detroit, and then he is hearing and seeing this new Detroit Rock City energy, plus he is steeped in Motown. So as you said, this diversity is just a beautiful exposure of what the city was really putting out musically, I believe, and also socially.
Absolutely. You know, I remember one of us, a funny story, one of the festivals we did, one of the bands didn't show up or something. And I don't know if you remember Cub Coda and Brownsville Station, Smoking in the Boys' Room.
That of course. Song. Yes.
And we were good friends with them, very good friends. Cubby had a big crush on Susie. Great guys. And the band didn't show up. So there's Mickey like having to problem solve it, right? We all got up and jammed and filled a slot, and we called ourselves the Plastic Dipshit Band. And it was the Brownsville Station guys and the Pleasure Seekers and Mickey, and we got up and played and filled the slot. It was hilarious.
That is,
I don't know what we played. We jammed and whatever, but we got past the time where he had had that band and didn't show.
Well, this is what we're going to be exploring in season 3 in so much depth, because I know you have so many stories to share with us. But I just want to round this out as we are nearing the end of season 2. And we're talking about your historic family. And I really wanted to set the stage for people, because when I say historic, not only did all of you live this amazing history, your grandfather being an immigrant, coming over, living in poverty, your father being raised in poverty, and yet he is so brilliant that he has all of these ideas to not only be in the car industry, because that was a given in Detroit, but also he starts playing music. He's self-taught. He books himself at gigs. He is the least talented, as you said, or of the other players, although he's incredibly talented, and it's only because he was self-taught. Then he brings in your sister Susie to play bongos for 25 cents a gig as a kid. Yep, yep. And then, you know, Mickey is playing piano, and all of you, the rest of you, are having music lessons at school and vocal lessons. And you're now steeped in this incredibly talented musical quattro family in the moment, historically, when rock and roll is exploding on the scene in the mid-60s all over the world. And Detroit is now taking this all in, making it as Detroit style as you could possibly be. You're in a groundbreaking female band called the Pleasure Seekers, one of the first recorded bands ever. We're going to talk about that again in more depth in season three. Your brother now is putting together all of these music festivals. And we're about to embark in the late 1960s in season three. But Patty, as we're saying goodbye to letting and exposing your talented family to the listeners, what are your thoughts on what it meant to grow up as a Quattro during this moment in time?
Well, I can say that has to encapsulate growing up Detroit, because that's a huge part of the DNA of when you were lucky enough to grow up in that environment and in the environment that my dad provided us. They go hand in hand. You can't separate them. I mean, Detroit made rock and roll more than musical entertainment. It became a lifestyle unique to any other city, and other places wove music into their culture and all that. But in Detroit, music was the culture. And it was the culture in my family, the family business. The bands weren't so much about artistic expression as they were into the energy and the excitement and the primal ferocity of this new explosive rock music, simply because rock and roll wasn't just what they played. It was what we were. And it was what I was within my family. That's what we were taught and nurtured for. Growing up in Detroit and in my family was like sneaking up on magic.
Come along.